Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's no intro for this podcast, Julian Gill, other than I'm glad that you're in front of me right now.
Hello, I'm Hello. Looking deeply into your eyes.
I know.
And realising that there's another person in the room watching.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not used to sitting in the middle, and it's annoying because I don't have the eyeball strength to have one eye on you, Jules,
you're
and
not
one
an
eye on you. I'm not an iguana.
No, chameleon. Is it iguana?
Yeah, chameleon.
What's wrong with the old eyes either way? You're not one of them.
Like a dinosaur, a T-Rex.
Yeah. Well, you can look at two things at the same time. Yeah. With the big squiggly eyes. Now, we're recording this after the main podcast, just to break all continuity, but that podcast won't be going up until Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
But we thought, because Jules Gill's up in the north for a bit, we'll do both podcasts with three people, which is to get him on the wind-up, which is usually me and Josh's thing, where we talk about whatever we're playing, whatever's going down in the industry. And so we'll get to a whole bunch of stuff that we're all collectively playing. But I thought we would open on the fact that Assassin's Creed Mirage is this year's, or at least the newest, Assassin's Creed game, to be fully detailed on September 10th at the next Ubisoft live stream.
I'll tell you what, it still feels like a bloody Mirage. We don't know anything about it. Am I right?
We know that we're going to be playing as Basim, new fan favorite character from Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I just wanted to do the talking point of, do we think Assassin's Creed, the future of that series, is actually in the past? Because they've talked a lot how this version of the game, this newest game, is actually a return to the way things were before all the open world stuff, before all the pirate ship gubbins as of Black Flag, etc. And this is meant to be a return to ostensibly 2007 Assassin's Creed. Do either of us care?
I am not a big fan of that, because that smacks of a big old Peter Molyneux. Oh, the watch my next game. It's going to be greater than the previous game.
Right.
The previous game was terrible. Then that game comes out. I'll watch my next game. The previous game was terrible. It's like whenever you do like a return to form, you're basically admitting to the industry that you made a mistake, that you're in a position that you don't want the series to be in.
Well, the only reason that Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla exist is because of The Witcher 3. That is entirely, they were chasing that. Like, not to quote someone I may or may not know who works within Ubisoft, direction is entirely The Witcher 3 blew up. We should probably do one of them. And it works or it doesn't work in regards to people have their favorites or everything, but I feel like Valhalla was exhausting. Like, that was like the most that they could have stretched that template out, and it probably is time to do something that feels like Assassin's Creed again.
Yeah, like tightly scripted scenarios and environments.
Actual stealth.
Like, the amount of times that we've all sat down, obviously online, because it's the first time we sat together in the room since like 2019 together, we've always said that open worlds are fantastic if there's stuff and to do with them that is relevant to the story or makes you feel like it's worth exploring. The Assassin's Creed games have been hit by bloat of like unprecedented proportions, just going on map size rather than quality of stuff within said map to make you want to explore. I would be much happier to see things dialed back to a sort of like Shadow of Mordor approach, where you had levels, big levels, but never too overwhelming and jam-packed full of stuff to do. So bring back the smaller, well-curated world
and
genre.
Leave the flags.
It's really snappy.
Leave those flags alone.
What is it? 400 flags and no achievement.
Like per every city. Like
get out of here.
We don't need them at all. I just want to open on that talking point. September 10th is the Ubisoft Forward, where they're apparently gonna. I don't know if they're gonna dedicate the whole stream to it, but we'll find out exactly what the future of Assassin's Creed is.
It's weird, right?
It's a thing,
because like this feels very much like a stopgap release, because they announced that Assassin's Creed Infinity thing, but that was obviously going to take a few years, and now we're getting this back to basics title. That just kind of feels like an anomaly.
DLC.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like the original report said that it was supposed to be DLC for Valhalla, and then they were like, let's spin it out into a full game because we don't have an Assassin's Creed ready to go for next year or whatever. So I don't know if this is going to set a trend.
Yeah.
And for as much as I don't like everything that you mentioned there, Jules, about Valhalla Valhalla's bloat and Ubisoft's bloat in general. Like, Valhalla sold so much that
it did.
What incentive do they have to radically change? Because the money's coming in better than it ever has. So.
I wonder if, like, yeah, Valhalla's initial unit sales were, like, sky high. I know a lot of people gravitated towards all the Viking stuff, but they've rinsed that so much. Like, all the Dawn of Ragnarok stuff. Like, again, Ubisoft going, what's going to work? Let's do a God of War. Like, it just, it went super...
It's so hot right now.
Yes, it went, like, supernatural, and it was all up against big bosses that you would also be in the likes of God of War. Like, I'm sure, like, there's, like, Loki crossover and everything else. And so, yeah, I think that I've not tracked the DLC sales, but I guess that they've done all that stuff. Maybe they've now exhausted that time period, and now they can move on to something else that feels more like a reset.
Huge pop, by the way, that, as you've just revealed, that it was cut content for the original game or original. So when they say we're going back to basics, it's like, what you're really saying is that we're hashing out something from literally years ago, so of course it's going to feel a bit out of step with our current program.
Like, there is that.
They're trying to sell it like, oh, you remember back in the good old days of Assassin's Creed where everything was smaller, more personalized? Well, I got a treat for you, my friends, because we got some stuff that we just couldn't even bother to finish out last time.
Throwing daggers.
Have some reheated sick. Go on, get it down here.
Go hide on the rooftop again. Yeah, we'll see how it turns out. I don't know, Assassin's Creed is in such a weird place. I've played like 25 hours of Assassin's Creed Odyssey this year. Don't ask me why. I literally don't know. I just started playing it
why
again.
Why, Scott?
I don't know, mate. I just need something to do. And so I started playing through that in the extended drought that was the gaming calendar across this year. So I'm curious what happens with that stuff. But yeah, let's talk about all the stuff that we've been playing. Jules Gill and Josh Brown, you both know what Thymessia is. Oh, you, both, like, you had a reaction to this in between recordings. I'm just going to let you go. Josh Brown, you're playing this game?
You go, man.
It's so rare that I ever just kind of scroll through the recently added games on like the PlayStation Store. But I was doing that this weekend because I just wanted a hit of something. And I kind of saw
Jumping
this
Tacos,
game.
No.
No, I thought Inscription, no. I thought Midnight Flight Express, no.
We're going to come back to that.
But I just kind of wanted something different. You know when you want something that's just yours. And I was like, no one has mentioned this game. And it looks sick. It looks like Bloodborne. Yeah. So I took a punt on it, and it has paid off big time. Okay. And I put like 4 hours into it last night, and it's like a Souls-like experience that's very much kind of taken from
screenshots of this.
The Bloodborne aesthetic. But it actually plays more like Neo, I thought, in terms of its level design, in terms of its encounter design. And it just rips, man. Like, the combat is great. I want to hear more about what you think of it, Jules, because I was surprised at how well it plays.
I was lucky enough to get an early copy to play through for like a preview review, and I was just like sat back, and I was like, well, this is very well fleshed out for a game that I didn't actually know anything about. Like, admittedly, we'll start with the sort of like negatives about it. The graphics, they're like mid-range. The environments, they feel very cliched, apart from maybe one or two very interesting areas. Like, I don't know how far you are through it, but have you got to the Royal Gardens?
Beautiful
locations. Like, imagine, Scott, if you will, and overgrown like greenhouses that have got these giant infected trees and roots smashing all the way through them. So it feels like there's beauty and danger all there. And there's like people with like farming shears attacking you in big sizes. It's very like, very weird.
Like gated.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I absolutely love the disjointed story of your character trying to remember what the hell is going on. Like, it's very much like you have to read all of the collectibles to get the lore thrown together. But the combat is slick and sick, bro. I absolutely love it because you have a cool ability where you can use this plague power to grab the sort of soul or inherent skills of the enemies you're fighting. So if they're carrying a spear and you use your plague grab attack, like from Devil May Cry 4 with a big hand, you'll rip a spear off of them.
Right.
And you can press a button at any time and it will do a combo with this mythical spear that will then dissipate.
Okay.
So it's like a one-time use, special attack using their moveset.
Does it always kill them?
It doesn't always kill them, but it can do hefty damage when used in the right situation.
Looking at footage of it, it's super Souls.
Yeah,
I wonder if they've
very much is.
I feel like Sony have sat on a Bloodborne remake for so long that now we've got Thymessia and we've got The Lies of P coming out as well. Like just two games going like, well, if you're not going to do it, then we'll just do this. Yeah. Like,
what I like about like this combat is like, if you look at the controller for it, it looks like it's just being ripped from Souls. You know, it's R1 to do a strike. It's R2 to do a heavy strike. It's circle to dodge. It's all that stuff. It's L1 to block. But the way that they integrate those base mechanics is so satisfying. Like, they kind of carry over the parry system from Sekiro, obviously not as well refined, to the L1 button. So instead of blocking, you're parrying the attacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have a cool thing with the enemy health system where your R1 attack like knocks their health down, but it leaves wounds. So say they have a white health bar. The R1 knocks the white down, but it leaves a trail of blue. And to get the blue down, you need to do an R2 attack to properly kill them. And that kind of decimates the health bar, and then it leaves them open to an execution at the end to finish them off. Like, otherwise, they're stunned. Yeah. Kind of like Alan Wake, but much better.
It's like, did you ever play the video game Resonance of Fate? You had chip damage that like basically need, you had somebody who had to whittle them down and then somebody to finish them off with a different type of weapon. And it's like, it's so rewarding.
That machine gun RPG.
Yes. Yeah. It happens that if you don't attack them within a certain time period, their health will regenerate up to the point where the chip damage was started. So you have this thing of constantly having to be on the offensive, because if you leave them for a couple of seconds, they're going to start regenerating all that health and you will have done technically no damage
to them
whatsoever.
Makes me think of Banner Saga, where it was like, you want to get like the...
That is a great... Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, it's just like a...
Wear down their defenses and then go in for the
kill. Like certain attacks do armor damage, certain attacks do actual damage, but like the armor number will always be subtracted, so you need to get that down first and then you can finish them off. That sounds cool. I guess like the thing that would make me curious is like, how does it do other things to distinguish? Did you want a Bloodborne itch scratched, or does it feel like this is like a worthwhile thing in itself?
I will say, after completing the game, I went back through it and I was like, okay, so like I say, the environments aren't going to really keep you around. The enemy design is interesting, but kind of generic towards the end. Uh-huh. The bosses, I will admit, aren't that great in it. They're single fights. I didn't die to a single one bar the end guy, and maybe a few cheap deaths with like an optional boss that you can have where it's one of those insta-kill sort of things.
Oh, okay.
So there's like a few really tough bosses that feel like they are not just Souls clone good. They are just great boss battles that come through it. But it's like a case of, I wouldn't buy this game for story, game design, but I would buy it for combat
for
those
Souls
bosses.
Itch.
So you are kind of buying it for the Souls itch.
I think that's fair. You know, it's like I said, it's in terms of its gameplay, I do think it's more like Neo and its level design, because the levels themselves are kind of, they're not the interconnected kind of mazes of Dark Souls 1. There are shortcuts and stuff.
You're literally going into your own mind to remember events, aren't you?
Totally. Yeah. And every time you do a submission in a level, it's the same level, but like backwards and with certain things blocked off, certain doors that you can't go into and stuff. So it's kind of basic in that regard, but it works and it is effective, I think, for me anyway. And I just think, for £25, I think like if you lower your expectations in terms of how much it actually costs, what you're getting for that money, I do think is worth it when you want to scratch that itch.
Yeah. I would say as well that it's got one of the most interesting upgrade systems going at the moment, because you know in like loads of games they go, you unlock stuff and it just sort of like cascades. You have this ability that also is buffed by this ability and blah, 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 blah. Here it asks you like pretty much straight away once you start getting those upgrade points, do you want to block?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, yes, I do. It's like, if you choose to block and have a better block thing, which will halve all the damage coming in, you will not be able to parry. It's like, oh, well, I want to parry then. It's like,
cool.
Do you want to parry and do more damage each time that you successfully do it?
Like
yes, okay. But the window to parry is going to be so small that you will take 9 hits out of 10 sort of thing. Okay. It's brutal when you have to make these choices.
Like, as a way to really force you into a build. Yeah. Like, that sounds worthwhile.
But the beauty of that, I think, it is worthwhile. Okay. But what I love about it is that you can respec at any time.
Yeah,
like
and it doesn't cost you anything.
No.
Like, it's just like, you get like an item that does it, but they're so plentiful. Like, wicked.
Totally. And it was good for boss fights, because there was one boss early on that I just couldn't parry at all. And I thought, what's the point in trying to parry and just getting killed when I can put them into the block and change from parry to blocking the damage outright? Mm-hmm. And that helped me get through that boss. But then the next boss... that wasn't
Does
working
not
at all.
Reward that at all.
Not because it was his attacks were just so brutal that it was decimating my health even with the blocks. So I went back and respect and actually put in points into the deflect and did exactly what you said there, where you got the bigger window to deflect, but it did less damage. And that's what got me through. And I thought, that's a cool system that's getting me to think about my build and what each encounter needs.
And also, if you tie it back into the themes of the game about going into this guy's memory to help him uncover what actually happened, it's quite nice, because it's like, you defeat this boss this one way, but then he goes back into his mind and it doesn't work that way again, so you respec it. So you're in the way that the game would tonally say that this makes sense, is that you go, oh, actually, no, that's not what happened. I didn't beat him by doing that. I got up in his face and I did that. And it's like retelling the story again and again and adapting to this until you end up with the perfect build that suits your playstyle, and you go up against the final boss and you're like, Yeah, that's actually what happened. That's what happened.
Right, because I quite liked sort of 2014, 2015-ish, the emergence of like the Souls clones. Like it took a few years for like obviously Dark Souls 2011 to take off, and then you got the likes of The Surge
and Lords of the Fallen,
which I love Lords of the Fallen. I love the XP system.
Are you pumped for the sequel?
Not the name, but yeah, exactly. It's called The Lords of the Fallen.
What's with this? We've got Layers of Fears, and yes, we've got The Lords of the Fallen.
And The Suicide Squad. Like, somewhere out there, there's it's clearly a prevailing thought amongst search engine SEO people who's like, okay, if we just do a little tweak, it's enough to get us back on the search terms.
And we'll sell the old version of the game as well, because people will be confused and buy both.
And I just like, it didn't work for The Suicide Squad, but obviously that movie, for whatever reason, didn't land anyway. I didn't think it was that good. But anyway, I feel like it's a search engine optimization. I think Layers of Fears sounds horrible.
It's very
the Lords of the Fallen is terrible as well.
Very Snakes on a Train vibe.
Yeah, Snakes on a Trains. And it's just like, yeah, I wonder if it's, my mind goes to an SEO thing. Yeah.
Oh man, if they called the sequel to Snakes on a Plane, Snakes on Planes, or Snakes on Trains.
Just the aliens approach.
Yeah.
But Lords of the Fallen thing. Yeah, it reminded me how much I liked that original game. And the thing is, I was going to say in regard to all these Souls clones, maybe if we think of just the Souls genre, you think of first-person shooter genre. It doesn't need to reinvent itself. It needs to just have a cool mechanic, something cool that hooks you in, that does it differently to the main game in the franchise or whatever. The likes of Superhot, like really cool first-person shooter, but it's all about slow motion and ducking under bullets and everything else. It's not trying to be Call of Duty. And so I wonder, like in the regard to like the Souls genre and the likes of The Surge and Lords of the Fallen, there was Bound by Blood or Bound by Flame or something as well,
okay,
which wasn't that good, but like that was there too. And I feel like it is like a thriving genre. So the reason that I love Lords of the Fallen is because had that really cool XP system where like you can just not use a checkpoint and keep your you get a multiplier every time you kill something.
Yeah.
You can get that multiplier even more and then bank it at the next checkpoint. And it's like, do you want to gamble on getting more XP? I thought that was a cool system. I think there's things like that where I'm like something like Themessia, where you're describing those mechanics where you can steal spears or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all it needs. And maybe all it needs is to look a little bit better than Bloodborne and fill that gap. It kind of, like I said, it feels like that and Lies of P are just doing what Sony won't do.
Yeah, 100%. And I do think like there's enough to this combat system that like you would just enjoy it if you just kind of pick up and play it, because it's, for me, it's almost like the perfect medium between the Dark Souls combat and Sekiro's combat. Yep. Like it's not as fast and as brutal as Sekiro, but it's not as slow and lethargic as Dark Souls. And I love both those combat systems, but it kind of has this flow to it that's kind of in between both of those gameplay styles and gives you enough tools to make each encounter like impactful and memorable. And then it has the additional stuff that we were talking about there with the upgrade system, with the Reeve ability to get those weapons that just gives it enough of an edge to distinguish itself from its clear inspirations.
Does it perform well?
It does. No, yeah, it does. Right, I've had one area, because it's optimized for the PlayStation 5 and next-gen consoles now.
I was playing on PC as well and can vouch for that. It was pretty good.
There you go. And there was only one area with a big hulking boss where I got some slowdown, but everywhere else has been fine.
Right. That sounds cool. As you guys have described this, I'm like, Souls games, I can take that itch now. I can scratch that itch again. It's been a while.
I would say that don't go in there inspecting like the boss battles to reinvent the wheel. There was none that I went through apart from maybe the final one where it was like, oh, this is a... I feel like you'd seen it all and done it all before for the most, and that's not a bad thing.
Right.
But it's just like, don't go in there expecting the boss battles to be the talking point about that game. I just say that the combat in general and the overall interesting take on its story probably is the best reason to pick it up.
Speaking of things to go into and not expect very much, you've played the Dragon Ball Battle Royale game.
Oh, baby.
It's called Dragon Ball The Breakers. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for this, Josh.
Dude, PlayStation themselves emailed me and said, because I've been playing Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Jim Ryan, have you seen this? The Breakers, mate.
It was from Jim, and he was like, have you seen this game, The Breakers? And I thought, what is this? So please tell me what this is.
Jim? It was like, you knock on the door, and it was your mate who sells the old chipped PS1s back in the day. So I'll tell you what, mate, I've got this Breaker. I've got this Breaker thing. I heard you like the good stuff. The Breakers...
That's okay.
I love my contact.
Go
at, the person who sent me this.
Okay.
Big love to you.
Yes.
But at the same time, this game is a bit tosh.
Okay.
Because doesn't run very well.
Okay.
Kind of veering into single frame rates at some point. The gimmick is very funny. The animations are so bloody stiff. They've got rigor mortis. I would say that the areas are so pixelated and janky in there. Like, there's... Aesthetically, this is one of the least pleasing games that I have played, but it is so broken, it is so wild, the concept of having a team try and scavenge together items to build a time capsule in order for you to escape another player who is playing as one of the main villains of the different Dragon Ball series. So you've got Frieza, Cell, some of the androids rock up as well. Mm-hmm. There is some genuine terror. Like, you know when you're playing the Friday the 13th game?
I was going to say, it's asymmetrical.
Asymmetrical multiplayer. Like, that feeling of just rounding a corner in, like, Dead by Daylight and just being like, oh, no, there is, like, Cell, who's like, Frieza pointing his, like, death laser doing the little, like... The thing is that the person who's playing as the main villain, they have ridiculous amounts of powers, and so funny just watching them like do half animations to taunt people, because it's like, I can kill you at any time,
right,
and
right.
You're scrambling away like trying to do this.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But you can summon, like, the spirits of main Dragon Ball franchise heroes, so like to do damage against them or stun them. It's impossible almost to really truly beat them, so you do have to try and figure out like an escape thing. I had fun, but it was always with that massive caveat of like, I'm having fun, but it's not great.
So I apologize. I thought it was a battle royale game. I forgot the whole, I remember now seeing in the trailer the whole asymmetrical thing. So that's kind of what they're chasing. The Friday the 13th game, the Predator game, whatever, like the stuff that Ilphonic have been doing for the last few years, and Dead by Daylight as well.
Yeah.
What a weird fit for a Dragon Ball game.
Like, I never saw this coming.
No.
I enjoyed the fact that they are really just trying something new for them. They're going out of their comfort zone. I just kind of wish the budget for this had been a bit bigger, because I feel like there's potentially a great idea here, because who wouldn't want to like play as Cell or Frieza and like wreck havoc across the world sort of thing. And the environments, while not being super detailed, have that real Dragon Ball charm. Like, you know, you cars in Dragon Ball look like only cars in Dragon Ball. Every character's got this sort of like real like nice animations like in certain frames. Mm-hmm. But it's just a little bit janky here and there. Like, you know those games where you don't have a turning circle in game, so you face one way and you immediately turn your analog stick and they immediately teleport like the other way. It's that times a million. Like, just the edges need to be polished. But this is a beta, so give it some slack, and I hope that when they finally release this game, it will look as good as the fun that I have had. Because when it was running on all cylinders, I did have a really good time.
I do have a feeling as well that they're trying to pivot from the Fortnite crowd, the people who are loving Dragon Ball because of Fortnite, straight into the Breakers. Like, I think it's a free-to-play game anyway. It says, monetization will be included and everything. So I wonder if consoles were the target audience, any target platform anyway, and PC's just kind of there because we'll get there or whatever. You were playing on PC?
I was playing on PC.
Yeah, so I just wonder, like, if they, like I said, they, some business person who keep putting S's in front of everything for titles will think we have a Fortnite crowd ready and waiting. We should put them into the breakers. Speaking of Dragon Ball, though, Josh, you picked up FighterZ.
Yes.
Which is a hell of a shout.
Well, technically,
one of the best fighting games of all time.
We picked up because, yes. As I'm sure you guys are well aware, like, you go through Dragon Ball moots. You know, yes. You have a period out, and then something comes out, like the new superhero movie,
yep.
And you
so
think, good Lord, I love Dragon Ball. Yeah. This happened a few years ago when I had a Friday night spare. My girlfriend was out, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to go to CEX. I'm going to go buy Dragon Ball FighterZ, see what all the fuss is about. So I did that, got back home, installed it, played it for literally 15 minutes, and never picked it up again. Oh. So now, 2 or 3 years later, down the line, I thought, now's the time to reinstall it and finally get back into it. So I did that at the weekend and played a lot of the story mode. And it's, like, sublime. The issue is, I'm bad 2D fighters, and that impacts my enjoyment of this game, because in my mind, the ideal Dragon Ball fighting game for me is Dragon Ball Z Budokai 2.
Budokai 3,
baby.
Yeah.
And it's like, this game is so much better than that.
Yeah.
But in my brain, I've romanticized those earlier fighting games so much that I'm not disappointed, but it's just, it's not mine.
The thing is, there's a speed to FighterZ that I think when you get it down is unlike anything else. You can play as fast as the characters fight in the anime or whatever. But there's also that side of it where you're just getting dominated. Like, and the screen can get so messy. There's so many projectile attacks, so many energy bursts and everything, where it's like everything is coming at you all at once. And I don't think the game does a very good job of teaching your defensive mechanics either. Like, to realize that, all I need to do is just hold a button while I'm getting wailed on and I'll teleport out.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is eventually included in the tutorial, but it's like, right, it's buried at the bottom, like stuff like that.
I'm not sure if things have changed because the whole UI is completely different to when I played 2 years ago. But now the story mode, like the first hours of that story mode is just every battle is teaching you a basic tutorial prompt.
Yeah, it's quite laborious.
And it's good for, you know, your legibility of the controls and stuff. Like, it's a really essential stuff, but also kind of boring when you want to experience
so
a story and
fights.
Because it is, like, every fight is like step by step. And it would be fine, I think, if they rolled more in. I know they don't want to overwhelm you, but sometimes it's like, you know, Circle does a heavy kick, and then it'll be like, that's the tutorial done now. Yeah. Finish the objective. Yeah. Defeat the fighters, and then we'll move on to the next one. And the next one is like, Square does a light punch. Yeah. And it's like, you could have rolled this together.
You could put this all in one big.
Yeah, I remember thinking that, because I played it back in 2017. You did the review for it, Jules, but I played quite a lot of it back then. I didn't get very far through the story mode. I just kept playing the versus mode, because I was like, I want to play as someone other than Goku.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that the story gets there, but like, I just kept doing the versus matches. And then very recently, I'm on a massive Dragon Ball kick. I think it was just because Super Hero got announced. And so I binged the whole Cell saga. We had a few days off, like, a couple of weeks ago, did all of Cell. I'm halfway through the Saiyaman saga at the minute. I'm going to finish out Z. I've bought the Super box set because I want to get back into that or watch all of that. And I've just been playing Kakarot and FighterZ.
Question, right? So I'm going to get Kakarot, and Xenoverse 2 is coming to PlayStation Plus at the end of the month as well, which I want to jump in. Do any of these games have my boy Garlic Jr. in them?
No.
Because why not?
Because
I know it's a filler arc, and I know it might not even be canon, but where is my body?
That's why.
Garlic Jr. Yeah.
It's, to be honest, do you know what? I think, was he not a character in one of the very late era PS2 games like they came out in? Because I know that there was one that kind of was like the Smash Bros. Ultimate of the time, where it just had everyone in, but it had the hilarious thing where they didn't balance it. So it was like, if you played as Broly, you were nigh on unstoppable.
You were
but if
Broly.
If you played as Hercule, or like, you're basically just kind of like, it's like, Satan Job, and then you're just kind of like, it literally does next to no damage. But that was brilliant in terms of like, oh, I want a challenge. I'm going to play as the worst roster character.
Palmy loves them doing that. Boskonovich-ing Hercule or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, like FighterZ, it has that, it's like a brick wall learning curve. Like you're almost better off just jumping into the versus stuff for a bit, playing around with the controls, and then going into the tutorial and plugging the gaps of what you don't know. Because I think that when it gets there, for me, it is head and shoulders the best Dragon Ball game. Like, it just, because it replicates the action so well. Like, I really like Kakarot, and I think Kakarot's a fun way of playing through the Z saga, or like the various sagas, Namek and Cell and everything. Because they just boil them down to like just a handful of fights, but they then recreate some stuff in the cutscenes. So if you just want to refresh yourself of like what the Namek saga was or whatever, you can do that. The Demon Slayer game does that immaculately as well. But yeah, are you going to go back to Xenoverse and stuff?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm having fun with fighters. Like I say, it's an impeccable game. It's just my own struggle with 2D fighters in terms of it's kind of, it feels cramped in the space in the screen.
Yeah. It is very intense.
It's incredibly hectic as well. Yeah.
Incredibly hectic. But I'm getting there and I'm going to enjoy that. And I do want to go try Kakarot, especially. I wanted to get for this weekend because it was in the sale. It was in the PlayStation sale. It was like £10. Mm. But then I went to Leeds Festival and the sale ended and I came back and it was £49.99. Yeah. So I was like, let's just install Fighters instead.
Like, I have to admit, Kakarot I had a pretty good time with. Like, I like the battle system. I thought that it was like very engaging, maybe a bit damage spongy, some of the enemies in there, but
it's an RPG, but like in like a quote unquote thing, it's like everything's stat based.
But I did like, as Scott was saying, it's like it takes those sagas and you know them off by heart by now.
Yeah.
But so it just condenses them down to the key moments and the filler is kind of lifted out of it, which I'm very grateful for because previous retellings, they've just basically like, right, well, let's put everything into it. Mm-hmm. But by that time, you've already played through the same stories a million times. Like, there's only so many times that I can laugh myself until I start crying when we see a bloody Krillin getting exploded. Like, everyone else, like, it's just like, it's the most emotional thing. I'm just like,
Not this many years after.
I think Sabine.
Kakarot as well. I really like the combat because like it's like that whole thing of, you know, like Dragon Ball takes place on a 3D plane, like everyone's getting launched through a mountain. Just let me have a game where I can just boot a guy through a mountain. So I love the finishes in Fighter Z because there's so many variations on those finishes, and I love all the zoom outs to like what's happening outside the planet
when the planet like has the like the explosion like fire off into space. It's like, whoa,
like when Vegeta I've been watching the Cell saga, so like when Vegeta finally hits Cell with everything he has and Cell's like halved and you see it from space and I was like, oh, it's so cool. That's why I love FighterZ. It's the spectacle, especially when you get it down. But yeah, Kakarot's best parts are when you're teleporting and catching up with the guy and then launching them away, and all the sound effects are on point. That stuff's great, but Jules is right. It gets so spongy,
right?
Where it's like classic RPG stuff, where like this guy's basic punch now does 5,000 damage because they're two levels above you, and it's like, go out and grind some stuff. However, I think the secret sauce is that they have recreated the world of Dragon Ball to just fly around.
Nice. That's very nice.
Fly mechanics don't feel great, but you are still flying around those worlds.
It's the same thing as DC Universe Online. The flying mechanics weren't great there, but it's flying around Gotham, flying around Metropolis. It owned. I want to just fly around Namek and, you know, see what the crack is there. What is going on?
There's a lot of filler going on.
World is ending.
There's a little green fella down there. All right, man. How's it going?
Tons of green fellas.
What's that? Oh, not well.
There's also tons of collectible. There's like loads of filler. But you can also just mainline the story missions and just play it as if you were playing the saga.
Oh, baby. I'm going to completionist that thing. Can I ask
pull you back from the cliff. No, don't do that.
There's a big grind ahead of you if you want to do that.
Not satisfying.
There's some challenges that require you to do certain stuff with certain things, with certain health bars left and time management. It is pretty brutal.
Just play the story missions. Like, do that stuff. Man. I know what you'll do because you'll want to play all of it, but it's just you're worth more than that.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true.
You are.
Please also don't do the same with Xenoverse 2 because again, there's a few challenges in there that are absolute bull.
Well, please explain to me what Xenoverse 2 is because I'm not familiar with that.
Surprisingly, it's a fighting
all.
Game. As based in the Dragon Ball universe, it's a beautiful marriage of what I would consider to be. Do you remember when the Naruto Ninja Storm games came out? It's that style of combat in that sort of like weird like perspective,
like an arena fighter.
Yeah, the fighting in the game
I've not played the universe,
is great. The story is a bit like, a little bit whoa, a little bit way, a little bit okay. I won't spoil some of the newer elements to it because there's a few bits to delve into that are a bit like, okay, we're going this direction. But let's just say timey-wimey shenanigans.
Right.
Okay. I think because, they announced that Xenoverse is coming back out. I feel like, I forgot the name of the animation studio behind Dragon Ball. I know it's got a few different distributors like Funimation and stuff. But anyway, I feel like they're trying to get Dragon Ball back into the conversation, which they have done through Fortnite. Mm-hmm. It's clearly worked on us three.
Yep.
And then Sony have gone like, well, what have we got that we can put out? And it's like Xenoverse.
Yep.
And then Kakarot and FighterZ were also like heavily discounted. But yeah, I think in as much as your options go for playing New Age Dragon Ball stuff, you've done pretty well. I would stick with FighterZ. I think there's enough there to like unlock. Like, do you feel like you're done with it already?
I'm not done with it. I'll go back to it, but I will drop that bad boy as soon as something shinier and more open world comes around is the thing.
I feel like FighterZ, you have to get over the plateau of just getting your face punched in by randoms over and over again and being tasked to do this quite a lot of repetitive tasks, but the same repetitive tasks are somehow slightly more fun in Kakarot because of the fact it is an RPG, so at least you see your levels going up and your powers increasing in that sense. So there is always like, in Fighters, I would, or FighterZ, I always found like you go through the story mode and it's like, when do I unlock the next interesting thing? I have no idea when that's going to happen. But in Kakarot, you're always being like, I've got a shiny thing. Like, you're
plus,
like, oh, okay, yeah.
In Kakarot, obviously, it's the thing that was the whole thing in the review period, which is true. It's called Dragon Ball Kakarot. You barely play as Goku.
Right. Like, yeah, that's a bit odd.
That it is weird, but it also means that you have a story mode where you are just suddenly flying around as Piccolo or flying around as Trunks or flying around as Vegeta. And like that is fun. And like, you know, you still have random encounters as you're flying around. So yeah, it's they're a good combo. I think they work really well together because they both serve different things. Like FighterZ isn't going to let you play through the saga and anywhere near the same way that Kakarot is.
Just big shout out to Kakarot for being one of the very few games to give Piccolo his day because you actually feel powerful in it. I know that the new movie is meant to address
Special
that as well.
Cannon.
But at the same time,
have you seen Superhero?
I'm the strongest warrior on Namek.
Because I know you've not seen Superhero. No. Have you seen the new movie?
I ain't seen it, brother.
I've seen the new. I'm not gonna.
I've heard that they have like him and Gohan have like their moment.
Kinda.
It's like. Kinda. That's also what
I've heard. It's not because people are selling this movie as like, oh my God, it's the Piccolo and Gohan movie. It's not.
It's not.
Like, there are scenes where they are together. There's a phenomenal thing at the end that I'd, oh my God, it's perfect. I could cry. It's perfect. But like,
Gohan, I'm adopting you. A dad who's actually there for me.
But that's like, yeah, there's some really good stuff in there. And I think that, yeah, in terms of Piccolo stuff, Piccolo gets a moment that we've waited for 25 years. However long you've been watching Dragon Ball. They pay off something that is exquisitely done.
Oh, just in my mind, that could only be like every single main villain lying on top of one another, completely KO'd, and he just arrives from the sky and stomps so hard he breaks through all of their skulls simultaneously and just goes, I am the best! And then fires two special beam cannons out either side.
And that was
just, and they just tear through the world, and Vegeta's like, whoa.
Hilariously, you're not that far off.
Oh my God!
You'll have to watch that movie.
Okay, watching that then.
Speaking of cool fighting things, we'll end on Midnight Fight Express. Now, I know Josh hasn't played this, but I just want to wax on about this game. Let you ask questions if you have them, because me and Jules have both finished it.
You start talking about it, and I will provide a music soundtrack like in the song. So,
this mixing board will absolutely make you level with me, but
I'll start it now because that'll just blow out the
The thing is, first off, shout out to the Noise Cream, the composer of the soundtrack. One of the
unbelievably
filthiest synth soundtracks ever made.
I felt like, Batman Beyond. You know, it's like a Batman in the future. Whenever he's in that club scene, there's always like a sound. They never linger on it that long enough, but it's always just like the filthiest electro beats. You can imagine the DJ at the time has got like a permanent squint on and he's looking at his decks that they're covered in grime because he's just like, whoa, stinky, like that. Like DJ Stinker is mixing up something fierce. And in this game, I'm just like, oh, I am Terry McGinnis. I am loving life right now.
It goes in a way that few games just go. And I think the thing is, like, it absolutely goes. The music kicks the hell in. Like, the script's not great, but the guy's having, it's a solo dev.
One guy made it.
One guy.
That is nuts.
For like 8 years or something. But like very much having fun with Western tropes, Western action tropes, like taking the mick out of various action characters and what we think of as cool action stuff, having a lot of fun with it. I think sometimes it's not fully self-aware and the dude thinks things are badass that are a bit cringy, but it largely just works because everything else plays so well. And as I think at the beginning, as much as it just goes, the soundtrack kicks in and whatever, it does take a couple of levels for you to get enough unlock points to get the stuff that differentiates the combat because it is so environmentally focused, whether you're doing finishes against the wall or you're picking stuff up all the time.
Yeah.
It's not an Arkham game and it's not a Platinum game either.
You know when you pick up Sifu for the first time and you're getting into grips with what you can and can't do. Even your base level skills there make you feel so overwhelmed, like so overpowered almost to begin with as you're just starting to figure things out. Here, it does play things a little bit too safe in the first like 40 minutes or so by just being like, you can punch, you can do a throw.
There's I don't think it's that long, but I know what you mean. It's the first few levels.
But when you start pouring in those skill points, my God, you end up with stuff because you can go back through levels.
Yep.
And once you've completed them, you unlock challenges and you go through and it'd be like, finish this level within 30 seconds or like don't take any damage and stuff like that. And they seem impossible at that point in time because you're like, how do I do that? You go back to them once you've leveled up a few times and hoo boy, you're kicking boxes into people's faces while at the same time rolling through, throwing chairs at somebody. Then you slide underneath somebody, grapple them, do a German suplex on that, grab their gun, bam, 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 bam. I was like, oh
my God, right? When you first get the gun, the way that they do gun combat, it's like Gun Carter, like it's John Wick.
Yeah.
Like the way he
like holds it. Like
you like hold, yeah. And you're like moving same. in like a proper pose. Like, and that's obviously dynamically put into the fight. So it's like, I'm going to target the guy with the gun, do a disarm, and then I'm going to pop three other guys and then throw throw the gun at the other guy, and then I'm going to, like Joel said, suplex the other guy. Yeah. Like
guns in that game feel really nice. Yeah. They feel like, you know, in Hotline Miami, you like get your guns, and they feel like sometimes they're the only way to beat certain levels. Here, it's just like, oh, you get them, you're like, oh, I feel so overpowered right now because you have brought a knife to a gunfight, my friend, and you are just blasting fools away.
It's tons of like environmental interaction as well, like and some explosive stuff, which you're kind of encouraged to kick people towards and maybe shoot
and
it.
And then shoot it.
Or just pick it up and throw it at a guy. Nice. There's a bit at the beginning where like there's an explosive canister. One of the first times the game's like, hey, by the way, these things are going to explode. And then some big big dude comes in, like a big heavy comes in. And I was like, I'm just going to kick the canister at him. And it just blew him up. And I was like, sweet, okay, that's cool. But I think, it's having so much fun with an over-the-top melee-focused, martial arts-focused action game that it just goes. I think that there are some levels towards the end that I wish were playtested a bit more.
Sniper helicopter.
That level, that thing, it's like the fifth or sixth level where you're on a train and you're fighting dudes on the roof and it's awesome. One of the heavies can do a move that just ruptures you, so you just ragdoll and then you can just fall off the train and it sucks. But there's also a sniper, which you're trying to dodge the line sight, which goes off every few seconds. That I think that'll make people give up.
It's a bit of a problem because the game is isometric, so your sense of depth is slightly out, but it gives you a reticle on the floor to tell you where the sniper's going to shoot. But the sniper goes one shot. So you like, okay, rhythmically I can kind of get in there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're trying to manage fighting seven guys on the rooftop and it's a one-hit kill from the sniper.
And you'll stop to do grapples as well. Even,
and like, it won't just not target you if you're like midway through a combo. It just goes, nah, bam, you're dead. It's like, oh, so how do I get through this? And it was just basically like, go run up to one side, take the first guy there, run back down again. And it's like, that doesn't feel as good. But the next time that comes up again, you're just kind of like, oh, I'm much better prepared to deal with this because it's like, bah, 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 you're all dead. Give the fingers to the guy in the helicopter and watch him do his merry jig to death. Like,
yeah, I think there's a level way later on, which is my favorite level of the year, where you find a bunch of game devs who have, like a little indie team. Also, as I was going to mention, Noise Cream, the composer of the music, that guy's the DJ. He's in the game.
Yeah.
You can go up to him and his little text box just says, nch, nch, nch.
Yeah,
like,
so
that's cool.
Funny. Very good.
But you meet a bunch of game devs and they've just done a deal with some gangsters to get their game over the finish line, and that you walk into their like board meeting and they're just sort of like, well, we secured some funding, but it means that the dev house is now a grow house, so there's a bunch of weed in the corner, you might have noticed, but at least we can finish the game. And I was like, that's fun. That's like a nice goofy kind of way to write this script that I think works very, very well. But yeah, overall, Midnight Fight Express, like, it's cool that in this year we've had Sifu and this, like, there's just new ways to do melee stuff. Like, I miss martial arts in games. I think we did a chatty face where I was like, where the hell did martial arts go
in
games?
And they slightly come back.
And they've come back a little bit. So yeah, Midnight Fight Express, Dragon Ball FighterZ, not Dragon Ball The Breakers, and Themessia are all very solid titles. I didn't even have an outro for this. It's been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilbert. You're Josh Brown.
I certainly am.
And that's Jules Gill over there.
Life's coming at you fast, man.
I was like, oh, fuck. It's like we've skipped to like 20 minutes. Like, yeah, thank you very much for having me, lads. Absolute pleasure seeing you. And big love to everyone listening at home.
Hell,
big love.
Yes, we'll catch you guys all next week.
Bye. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.